Today's Taisho will be on case 18 in the Mumonkan, the Umenkwan. Case 18 is Tozan's Masajin. A monk asked Tozan, "What is Buddha?" Tozan replied, "Masajin." Mumon's comment, "Old Tozan attained the poor Zen of a clam. He opened the two halves of the shell a little and exposed all the liver and intestines inside. But tell me, how do you see Tozan?" Mumon's verse, 3 pounds of flax came sweeping along. Close were the words, but closer were the meaning. Those who argue about right and wrong are those enslaved by right and wrong. So I want to thank everybody for sitting so well, those of you who are online and those of you who are here. Thank you so much for sitting so well this morning. You know, those three sits in the morning are just so wonderful, right? Long ago, our group here, our Sangha here began, you know, I wondered if three periods of meditation like that were too long for people. You know, especially for people who aren't that experienced, sitting for an hour and a half, you know, with small breaks in between, that's a lot to ask. You know, and I have experimented, you know, we could stop after half an hour and do some walking meditation. But it's really not the same, you know, the depth of the sitting around me that I see is really noticeable. You know, if we interrupted our practice, our hour and a half of practice, that concentration just wouldn't be the same. And over the years, I've been so surprised to see just how beautifully and deeply people sit. It's a challenge, right? But descending into deep samadhi, deep ding, right? That's really how it's done. So thank you so much for your excellent effort this morning. So this koan is I think really one of the most important koans in the Mumonkan. Tozan is the Japanese pronunciation for Dongshan, Liangjie. He was a student of Umon, and one of the founders of the Zaotung school. Okay. His answer is, what is Buddha? Ma, flax, sa, three, qin, is like a pound. So it's like 3 pounds of flax. Okay, that's really the koan. What is Buddha? 3 pounds of flax. So, you know, like so many koans, this koan has a number of false leads. Right? I mean, sometimes koans want you to, the koans are designed to ask you to step out of your conventional ways of thinking. And also your conventional ways of seeing and feeling, right? And sometimes they do that by leading you, you could say, like up a blind alley. You know, sometimes a koan will include a detail, which is what we call in English a false lead, right? It's really, it looks like a clue, but it really goes nowhere, or it really misleads you. So, you know, if you were to practice with this koan for a little while, 3 pounds of flax, you know, pounds is a jin, is a weight. Like, so, you know, you might spend some time thinking about things that, how much things weigh, or the things that are heavy and things that are light. And you could spend a lot of time following that false lead, right? And a lot of koans work like that. They have a hook or a false lead. They lead you in the wrong direction. And you might say, well, why don't they just lead you in the right direction? Why this indirectness? Why this false, why the false leads? But you know, actually wandering down the wrong path is essential to waking up. It's absolutely essential. It's why these koans are sometimes so hard to understand. And it's, you know, we've been in our group, we've been reading sutras. So we looked at some of the early Agamas, some of the Pali sutras earlier this year. And we're now reading the Diamond Sutra. And we're going to go on to some other sutras, which are, you know, when you read these sutras, especially the Mahayana sutras, very hard to understand. You might think, why don't they just say it more simply? Why don't they just say it more simply? But you know, if they say it more simply, there's no chance that you will be rescued from your mental habits, right? From your ordinary mental habits. You know, people live in a world of really unhappiness and confusion. And, you know, they know sometimes that they're unhappy and confused, but they tend, we all people tend to rely on what's familiar. What's familiar? You know, so even if we're unhappy and confused, even if we get up every day feeling sad or feeling a loss, we will hold on to our familiar world because it's familiar. This is really fascinating, isn't it? You know, people will stay in a condition of unhappiness or a condition of fearfulness for all their lives. Because you know we tend to give the most importance to what's familiar. If it's familiar, we can trust it, even if it makes us unhappy, even if it makes us afraid all the time. And I think this is really like a trap that so many people get trapped in, right? You know, trusting what's familiar, right? And of course, you know, our sadness can be our closest companion. Our loneliness can become our closest companion. So it's very difficult sometimes it's almost impossible sometimes to free ourselves from our obstacles or these habits that trap us. So it's really important to get lost, right? It's really important to get lost. You know, if you are in a situation where you have to take the same road to work every day, right? Or maybe you walk to work. You'd be so lucky if you can walk to work. But if you have to drive to work, you know, you take the same drive every day. And you know, it's very rare after a while that you notice anything at all about your drive. You're just sort of checking off the mental boxes. You know, that now it's North Brunswick. Now it's, you know, you're just looking for the off ramps. You know, every once in a while, you know, you might take a wrong turn. And you take a wrong turn and you take another wrong turn, and suddenly you're in a part of New Jersey you've never been to before. And it can be frightening, and it can be annoying, but sometimes you see things you never saw before. I don't mean you see things you see as you haven't seen in a long time. You look around and you might see the buildings and, or you might see a park. And, suddenly it's like interesting. It's like interesting. So sometimes being lost helps us to break out of our habits, right? And even, even people who are home leavers can become prisoners of mental habits, if you get up every day and you meditate, and you always meditate pretty much in the same way, after a while, it can become routine, and it's just like driving to work with the same path, right? In a lot of the Zen literature, people like Rinzai, often come into the Chan Hall, the Zendo, and say things like, "You guys are all just getting your meals and sitting on your asses, and you're not really breaking through." So even people who have made great sacrifices by becoming, say, home leavers, those people too can get trapped by habit. I think this is what made Zen so wonderful, makes Zen so wonderful, and made Zen so important in China. The great ancestors of Chan, of Zen, wanted to create a path that confused people so they could get lost. And if they got lost, they could escape from their mental habits. Right? And I think Chan played an especially important role in this. It's interesting. Buddhism has survived in China longer than it survived in India. Think about that. The Buddha probably lived around 2500 BCE. And by around the 15th century of the Common Era, Buddhism was on the way out of India because of various kinds of political instability and persecution. But the Sangha has flourished in China probably for more than 20 centuries and still flourishing. And I think that part of the secret is that I think even Buddhists who are not Chan Buddhists, Zen Buddhists, I think that the secret to Chinese Buddhism's survival has a lot to do with understanding this problem of how we get trapped in our mental habits. So important to get lost. So, Sesshin is indispensable. If you want to practice, if you want to be a Zen Buddhist, if you want to be, you want to say Zen is my path, Sesshin is indispensable. You can't really be a Chan Buddhist, a practitioner of Chan, a practitioner of Zen, without doing Sesshin. Because we get in our cars and we drive down the Garden State Parkway, and we get up at 4:30 in the morning. And we eat this strange food, and we follow this very unfamiliar schedule. And it's all very disorienting. And actually, that's the most wonderful thing in the world. It's that kind of, it's like getting lost every minute of the day, right? So you know, Sesshin is really this amazing institution and absolutely essential if you want to practice Zen, practice Chan. So this koan has a false lead, right? It's 3 pounds of flax. It's really not about pounds. You know, it's three something, but we don't know what. You know, so after a while, you realize you're getting nowhere with the false lead of weight. So then, you know, you just start, you know, the way to work with this koan is just to say three flax. And if you say that for a while, you know, you'll think about flax. You know, you might know a little something about flax. Flax is a cloth like cotton. And when you, you know, they harvest stalks of flax and they crush the outer husk, you know, and they throw away the outer husk, and then the fibers are pulled through a comb. It's like a giant comb, like you comb your hair. And as you pull the stalks through the comb, the fibers become finer and finer and brighter and brighter, see? And very, very fine flax. Another word for flax in English is linen. You know, there's various grades of linen. There's burlap is actually flax too. Did you know that? Burlap is linen. But it's very crude, like very crude, very poorly processed. And then, you know, if you keep combing the fibers of flax, it gets finer and finer and finer. And it goes from being very dark to very light. And, you know, if you take those very fine fibers and you weave them, this very beautiful fine cloth, right? So it helps with this koan to let to know a little something about flax. You know. So then you say you say three flax. You know. And the koan, you know, short circuits your intellectual understanding. And you become lost, right? And you're just sort of in an empty place. Your mind should be fairly blank. And you just say three flax. And you know, to practice Zen is sort of to go into Wuxin, and you internalize the turning phrase, right? And you allow that turning phrase to activate your deeper mind, right? Activating your deeper mind is something we don't always do in our everyday lives. We tend, when we have a problem, to try to figure it out intellectually. But, you know, in Zen, we learn to use a deeper part of our mind. When you internalize the turning phrase, three flax, you could say it's like sinking down through the layers of your mind, right? Down through the layers of the mind. It goes through the first layer, which is thinking. And then, you know, it drops down into deeper layers of the mind. Maybe you remember your grandmother's flax tablecloth, right? You remember as a kid looking at that flax tablecloth and how beautiful, white, clean that tablecloth was, you know. If you're Chinese, you know that in the old days, families used to mourn the death of a family member by wearing coarse cloth, like burlap, right? which is also flax, right? So, you know, memories, right? And then, you know, the koan, the gungan, the turning phrase, goes deeper into the mind, right? And it begins to activate deeper intelligence, right? Deeper intelligence. You know, the conscious mind is really the smallest part of our awareness. It's actually like the tip of an iceberg. It's just a little tip of our awareness. Underneath the conscious mind is this big mind. We say big mind, right? And it processes everything in a different way, right? Processes everything in a different way. It's not a logical mind. You could say it's like associative mind, right? Like associative mind. So when you start saying three flax, and the koan sinks down, down, down into your big mind, your big unconscious mind, you know, things begin to float up. Things begin to float up. It's like out of the mysterious depths of your mind, something begins to float up. You may not think it's important, right? A lot of times when people are working with a koan, if their minds are blank and they're saying the turning phrase, things begin to float up that they might not think is important, but it's important to share that with the teacher, see? So, you know, you might come into the Dokusan room if you're saying three flax, and for a long time nothing might seem to be happening. But one day, you know, you might get off the cushion and walk into the kitchen after sitting, and you might feel everything around you is different somehow, just different. Everything around you seems so clear and present, right? And you know, you might not know why everything around you seems so clear and present, but what the koan has done is like changed the way you're experiencing the moment. You know, you can't change your mental habits by wanting to. You can change your mental habits a little bit by getting lost. But, you know, we Zen people know that we can deeply transform our consciousness by calling on the power of the big mind, yes, by using the gungan, using the koan, right? So, you know, you might be saying three flax, three flax, three flax, nothing's happening, you can't figure it out. You could feel anger, you could feel discouraged, but you just have to sit in that not knowing for a long time, for who knows, you know, a week, one sesshin, one day, who knows? But you just trust the process. You know, and then, you know, one day, you know, you are working in the kitchen or you sit down on your cushion and suddenly everything feels different somehow. See, this is like the magic of Zen, right? You know, we create so many bad habits, you know, in our everyday lives. We create all of these mental habits that prevent us from being awake and alert and observant, right? It's like driving on the same route every day to work and back, you know. We have habits that, you know, my father was a smoker, right? My father smoked cigarettes. And he kept trying to quit, right? He kept trying to quit. And eventually he went to his doctor and the doctor said, if you don't stop smoking cigarettes, you're going to die. So my father switched to cigars, right? And of course he died of lung cancer. It was so it was, you know, sad to see that he couldn't quit. I couldn't figure it out, right? I couldn't figure out why won't my, you know, I kept saying, "Dad, you need to quit cigarettes. You need to quit cigarettes." But then I realized, you know, so my father's smoking was his coping mechanism for so many things, right? So my father had a stressful job, and you know, the stress would just be very difficult for him to bear. And so, you know, when he was at work and he was very stressed, he would have a cigarette, and smoking that cigarette would, you know, I hope you don't smoke. Briefly in my life, I smoked. You know, and if you smoke, you wind up looking forward to the cigarette until you have one. So you might have long stretches where you're anticipating a cigarette. When you get the cigarette, actually, you know, tobacco is both relaxing and energizing, right? So, you know, I can see my father at work, very stressed and unhappy. And, you know, the cigarette ahead was like waving to him, "Come here, you know, you'll be happy." And, you know, smoking that cigarette made him calm and it gave him energy. And then that allowed him to go for a certain amount of time until his next cigarette, and, you know, my father didn't really have other strategies. You know, he started smoking very early in his life. He was in the Navy during the Second World War, and he actually served in East Asia. My father had Chinese friends in the Pacific Theater during World War II. And he said he started smoking because it was so boring to be on the deck of his ship. So, you know, smoking gave him something to look forward to. It lifted him up, it made him feel better. And that habit followed him through his whole life. As our habits become more and more, as they are reinforced over and over and over again in our life, they become harder to change. And they become actually like invisible to us. So people are actually like held in bondage mostly by their habits. You know, they're held in bondage by their beliefs, it's true. And they're held in bondage by other things too. But ultimately, it all comes down to like their habits. So, you know, when people are anxious, you know, they can go to a therapist and that helps. Please, you know, go to a therapist. It's very helpful. But you know, when we practice Zen, what we're doing is very, very much more profound, I would say. You know, we're really restructuring the way our consciousness works. And the koan, the way the koan works is that it short circuits our discriminating mind, and it goes down below the level even of our habits. Really, it like our habits are like you could think of them piled up under the thinking mind. There's like all these little mental, these little habits, like layers of the earth, right? You know. And the koan goes down below that to this place where the mind is really like fresh. When you go into Ushin and you look at the world, you're looking at the world through the eyes of like a baby. It's like you're starting your life all over again for that moment. You know, when you go into Ushin, your mind becomes completely empty. And then you look around or you eat your rice for lunch. You know, it's like beginning your existence all over again for a little while. And then, you know, the turning phrase of the koan activates a deeper part of your mind, and you begin to notice things that you can't normally notice because your habits get in the way. See? So if you say to yourself, if you're working on this koan, and if we've done this koan, excellent. If we haven't, I'm looking forward to working with you on it. You say three flax. Doesn't make any sense intellectually. It begins to trigger a lot of memories. But if you keep going back to the empty place and you say three flax, you know, the koan is going to show you something. It's going to like show you a different way of experiencing this moment. So you know, for reasons you can't even explain, you might be saying three flax, three flax, three flax. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you get off the cushion or you sit down on the cushion and you notice that you feel differently or things look differently. You can't make it happen, but it just happens, you know. I'll give people a koan and somebody will come in and say, you know, I feel like a child again, or I feel, or, you know, I heard a bird this morning. It was like I became the sound of the bird, you know. So, you know, what we do in Zen is we go back to the zero, we work backward through all of our mental habits. We sort of get below, beneath all of those mental habits. We go back to zero, and the koan is helping us to experience the world in a new way. We don't know what that new way will be. So we're sort of just, we say, going blindly, right? We're in emptiness, repeating the phrase. We don't think anything can happen, but something happens. And suddenly you see the world differently, or you feel the moment differently, or something changes. And people sometimes come into Dokusan, their private interview with me, and I'll say, what's happening on the cushion? And sometimes they're very excited, and sometimes they don't even realize what's happening until they begin to explain it. So, you know, this koan is really important koan because, you know, if you say three flax, three flax, three flax, you know, it actually doesn't have, this koan doesn't really have one answer. It has three answers, believe it or not. What happens is you sit down on the cushion, you say, you go into mushin, empty mind, right? You say three flax, three flax, three flax. And at some point, you know, at some point, it may take a day, it may take a week, you begin to experience the moment differently. And if you come in to see me in Dokusan and you say, this is what's happening, I'll say, very good. But go back to the koan again. And if you go back to the koan again, you go through that same process. Now you experience something else. And if you go, and I'll say, very good, please go back to the koan again. There's one more answer, see. And if you go down into emptiness, and then you keep saying three flax, three flax, you know, another change will happen. This is like three transformative moments will happen to you as you work with this koan. So this is really like, I think, one of the most important koans, because, you know, Dongshan, Tozan is trying to tell us something about our habits. You know, some of our habits we're aware of, and people are like my father, right? They know smoking is bad for them, but they don't know how to get out of it. And in fact, you know, even when we're aware of our habits, you know, they're so, we build our lives around our habits, right? I knew a guy when I was younger who was a gambler. He was a gambler. And I remember I was working with him when I was I used to work in restaurants. I used to work as a cook in a restaurant after I got out of college for a while. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, it was an Italian restaurant called Mamma Mia's, right? And I worked for him. He was the chef, the head chef. And I worked with him for about a year. And he said once, "Do you want to go play poker with me?" So I went out to play poker with him, and I was making at that time $80 a week. And he was making $250 a week, which seemed an enormous amount of money. And I went to this poker game, and all these guys sat around, and some of those people lost like $100. And when I saw what they were, how much, I said, "No, I don't want to play, I'll just watch," because I didn't want to lose any money. And my friend, his name was Gary, he lost a lot of money that night. And, you know, I could see when we were back in the restaurant how unhappy he was later. But he couldn't stop. Because, you know, gambling was who he was. You know, when he would gamble, he would feel powerful and free. And he would feel like a cowboy, right? Gambling made him feel powerful, free, sexy, manly. You know, he couldn't give it up. He couldn't give it up. And I just was making so little money, I didn't want to lose it. But he was a very nice man who was trapped in his habits, just like my father. You know, some of our habits we can't see. We can't see them, but we know we're sort of aware that we're trapped. Because we're sad, you know, people can be unhappy a lot, right? And if you ask them why are they unhappy, they don't know. They'll say, "I don't know, I'm just unhappy, just down." Or, you know, they can be mad all the time. You know, you meet people who are just like mad all the time. Or you know, there's many different forms that being trapped can take. And people can't always see the thing that's trapping them. Even sometimes people will say, you know, "My life just seems so dead. Just seems dead. Everything just seems meaningless, or everything seems lifeless." And all of those are different ways of saying, "I am trapped in my habits. I'm trapped in my habits." You know, so this koan is really saying you don't have to be trapped in your habits. You know, you can discover on the cushion, in your wuxin, in your empty mind, you can discover a whole new way of living your life. Just beautiful, whole new way of living your life. And it's not just one way. See, that's the thing that I think is so wonderful about this koan. You know, every time you come to Sesshin, you've said, "I want to break free from my habits." And you, and every time you do a koan, you work through a koan, you know, it's like you're experiencing the world in a slightly new way. And this process goes on and on until, you know, you see the world through, you could say, a Buddha's eyes. That's a world without habits, a world without habits. And that world is totally alive and fresh and new all the time. And sometimes we experience that in our Zen practice. It's why some of you have been sitting for, you know, decades, right? Because, you know, there are a million things in our lives that box us in and trap us, many of which we aren't even aware of. And we go into Ushin, and then we begin to trust the koan to take us to a new reality. And every time we do that, our ordinary reality becomes bigger and more open and more alive. Right? So I would say this path is so beautiful, right? So liberating. We have moments where we're trapped and moments where we don't know where we're going. But you know, that process of freeing ourselves and encountering the world in a liberating way just goes on and becomes more and more beautiful. You know, the Buddha said, "My path is beautiful at the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful at the end." But you know, actually, there is no end. You know, the process of waking up, you know, we say in the enlightenment experience, but actually, again and again in Zen, we have an enlightenment experience. And the process of waking up never stops. And every time we work through our habits and free ourselves, the world is brighter and bigger. And that process can go on and on. So all of you have come here to practice the great way. Right? All of you are going into deep Ushin and working with your Gung'an, your koans. And we're exploring together a world of freedom without our habits. A monk asked Dongshan, "What is Buddha?" Dongshan said, "Ma sa qing, 3 pounds of flax." Wumont's comment, "Old Tozan attained the poor Zen of a clam. He opened the two halves of the shell a little and exposed all the liver and intestines inside. But tell me, how do you see Tozan?" So remember that when Wumon criticizes Tozan, he's really complimenting him. He's saying Dongshan was a great Zen master. He showed us how to liberate ourselves from our habits. Wumon's verse, 3 pounds of flax came sweeping along. Close were the words, but closer was the meaning. Those who argue about right and wrong are those who are enslaved by right and wrong.